C1AN.
Number 4A.
I have come to the sixth subject of this article. Just let me recapitulate. In this article, she really shows how the claim of malicious animal magnetism works itself up and up and up, as if it had life and could create something more and more evil. That's in the period of the fifth revision. How does it do it? It does it by first making us believe that we don't have to handle evil, that we don't have to know that there is evil which has to be handled in our consciousness. If we are blind to that, then animal magnetism has a chance to take the second step and revert and reverse all the good natural inclination in us and develop the animal qualities in us instead of the spiritual qualities. If you are not awake to that and don't check that, then animal magnetism can work even further to the third, where it has us now into a state of semi-individuality, where we are no more quite sure what is good and what is evil, where we are in a state of drunkenness and intoxicated by a false moral standard, and where we don't anymore admit for intellectual capacities, how does she call it, and which admits of no intellectual, cultural, or spiritual growth. If we let animal magnetism do that, and we just go along in our life without any definiteness, without being disciplined, without following the study and adhering to the rules of metaphysics, well, then animal magnetism has the fourth chance that we will never understand each other, that there will be constant dissension on the subject of metaphysics. Then, doing that, bringing in that dissension, this really shows that then we begin to lose our ability to do good, to be constructive, and shows that then we begin to feel the loss of our abilities and what is, she says, the loss of power to heal. And in order to cover that up, animal magnetism tries to pull down the other fellow and to try to hinder the success of the other fellow, and so cover up our own failure. Then, in the sixth subject, it shows that animal magnetism tries to paralyze the conscientious activity to do right and to give activity to evil. It says that the malicious aim of perverted mind power is to paralyze good and give activity to evil. It starts faction and engenders envy and hatred, but activity is by no means a right of evil and its emissionaries. And lastly comes the death blow of love, the counterfeit of love, where animal magnetism tries to make us mistake its own suggestions for our own thoughts. Then we are in the ditch. If animal magnetism succeeds in making us believe that we are the culprit, that we have been thinking all that what is wrong, that we have been doing all that was wrong, then it got us. Then we stamp ourselves as the originator of evil and personalize evil and make us a sinner. That's always the most discouraging. Devastating and discouraging phase of animal magnetism, when we think, I have been the sinner, I have been doing it. when we no more recognize that it is a claim, but make it personal, then we are in hell, really. And how often do we think that? How often do we think that I have been doing this and that wrong, that I am to be blamed for being sick? How often it is that the practitioner treats his patient when the patient is sick as if that patient would have been the culprit? It's very cruel, because that's animal magnetism in its highest degree. It's no more seeing that animal magnetism is just a claim, but making that claim a person and putting it on that person who is not the culprit at all. So this is a very interesting article, and I think you will like to read it over and ponder it over and see how animal magnetism tries to influence us and to lure us into believing what animal magnetism claims to do. Well, that period lasted, as I say, until journal August 1890, and then Mrs. Eddy put a little notice into the journal of two paragraphs, and the second paragraph reads like this. It says, "Also, the discussion of malicious animal magnetism had better be dropped until scientists understand clearly how to handle this error, until they are not in danger of dwarfing their growth in love, small l, by falling into this lamentable practice in their attempts to meet it. Only patient, unceasing love to all mankind, love that cannot mistake, loves, capital L, loves A, can determine this question on the principle of Christian Science." See, that's how she ends that fifth period, and it's so typical. That fifth period is certainly necessary, and she went through it, and the whole movement went through it for four years, where it had to be awake that it is animal magnetism and not the person that is the dragon, and that dragon is persecuting not the person, but the spiritual ideas of woman. And I think if every month one reads in a journal an article on how this dragon spits at you, one gets frightened of it, one makes a reality of it. And in trying to meet it, I think one begins to be afraid of it, and perhaps tries to meet it in a human way, and with human means, and so on. And that's something most of us have witnessed, I think, as long as we knew Christian Science, that people got afraid of animal magnetism. They saw in animal magnetism a real devil. So that they would never talk anymore to a Roman Catholic, they would never travel in a bus face to face to a Catholic priest, and they would cross the road rather than to meet the Catholic on the pavement, and so on. Well, that's all a sign that one hasn't seen how it is a warfare between the dragon and the woman. And Mrs. Eddy must have seen that she said that she has seen that in meeting this lamentable practice, that they have fallen into the same practice. And so she said, "I must find something new. I must find a higher plane to handle animal magnetism." And so she turned to the positive sense of the fifth state, to love for all mankind. Says, "All right, in the unceasing love to all mankind, love that cannot mistake, love's aid, therein must be the answer to the whole question of animal magnetism." And so the next year, when she printed the new edition of Science and Health in 1891, was the 50th edition, a very well-known edition, the sixth revision, main revision. There she changed a lot in that chapter on animal magnetism. The sixth revision is the first revision which contained all the 16 chapters of Science and Health as we have it today. That's the first time that the textbook has 16 chapters, but these chapters were not at that time in the order as we have it today. But in that sixth revision, symbolical to the sixth stage of unfoldment of truth, she reduced the chapter Animal Magnetism still further from 13 pages to 7 pages to about the text we have it today. And she changed the scriptural note at the beginning of the chapter to a very typical scriptural note, one that was different from the fifth revision, which is very much different from the last revision. In that sixth revision of truth, the scriptural note was, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reproof them." So here we get quite a different tone, the tone that we should not have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, or positively seen that we should have fellowship with the active doing right. And in this edition, she drops all, or practically all, those paragraphs which were referring to the struggle with the dragon. All that struggle she eliminated out of this sixth revision. And the new trait, the new feature that comes in now is that feature of what is real, what is true, what is unreal, what is untrue. Here now, finally, she gives that sense where she says, there is but one real attraction. There is no more two. See, the duality begins to fall. There's but one real attraction. She says, for the first time, evil is not power. Its seeming despotism is but the belief. She boils animal magnetism down to belief. Christian Science despoils the kingdom of belief. Then she says, in reality, that's the first time she puts in this paragraph, in reality, there is no mortal mind, and consequently no transference of mortal thought and willpower. Life and being are of God. In Christian Science, man can do no harm. See, now comes the activity of good. That's the answer now to animal magnetism in this sixth revision. The answer now is truth. Truth which says animal magnetism is a belief. It's not something. It's not the power. It has no power. It's a belief. It has no reality. Later on, she says it has no quality of truth. And it is for the first time that she makes animal magnetism generic, where for the first time she has the side note, the genus of error, and writes, as named in Christian Science, animal magnetism or hypnotism is the specific term for error, just there, or mortal mind. It is the false belief that mind is in matter and is both evil and good, that evil is as real as good and more powerful. This belief has not one quality of truth. It is either ignorant or malicious. See, you now she ends it quite differently. She has risen now to the point of truth at that period of knowing what is true and what is error, and seeing that truth is real and that error is unreal, and therefore puts away all the baggage of all the different ways and means and so on, how animal magnetism works, and just boils it down to the genus of error and says there is but one animal magnetism, whatever it is called, ignorant or malicious, benevolent or malicious, if it's called voluntary or involuntary, if it's called active or intentional or apathetical animal magnetism, it's all the same stuff. it's animal magnetism, and its essence is that it has no quality of truth, no reality. Now, can you see how her thought unfolded and unfolded? And I wouldn't be surprised if in our life and in our unfoldment we go through the same stages, that at the beginning we handle animal magnetism or we look or approach animal magnetism very differently than years to come. Just in order to show how in Mrs. Eddy's thought she saw afterwards these stages, that she became aware that she always changed the modus of tackling animal magnetism. I just want to read from miscellaneous writings how she made a little review on these preceding revisions. She says, "The question is often proposed, how shall I treat malicious animal magnetism?" Well, this appeared, that must have appeared around about the 90s, 1800 and between 92 and 95 or so. Her answer is like this: "The hour has passed for this evil to be treated personally, but it should have been so dealt with at the outset." See, that was the third revision where she showed that we should go to the malpractitioner and tell him where he goes off. Yes, she said, Christian scientists should have gone personally to the malpractitioner and told him his fault and vindicated divine truth and love against human error and hate. That was the third. This growing error must now she comes to the now, you see, to another stage, must now be dealt with as evil and not as an evil doer or personality. That was the fourth revision where she put out of the text all that was personal. It must also be remembered that neither an evil claim nor an evil person is real, hence it is neither to be feared nor honored. Well, that's the standpoint she takes in the sixth revision, that it is a claim and that the claim is unreal. So you see, even when she reviews sometimes her unfoldment, she would show that. Well, then comes a time where one began to feel in her writing a change, round about the century, turning of the century, and where the last period broke on her thought. And in regard to animal magnetism, I think that period broke on her when she wrote that article in 1899, which is now in Mr. Lenny, called What Our Leader Says. This is the first article under the chapter heading of admonition and counsels. And all those articles really deal with the question of animal magnetism in one or the other form. And in the foreword of Miss Selene, she writes that it is well for earnest and loyal Christian scientists to fortify themselves against the mesmerism of personal pride and self-adulation, and that for this purpose she has given out miscellany. What is this new trend that begins to come into her thought? In that article, What Our Leader Says, she handles animal magnetism from quite a higher and sublimer standpoint. I will read it, that short article, quickly. And you will see at once that it has the tone of love, which says, well, handle animal magnetism by filling your thought with God. That's the compensation. It says, beloved Christian scientists, keep your minds so filled with truth and love that sin, disease, and death cannot enter them. It is plain that nothing can be added to the mind already full. There is no door through which evil can enter. and no space for evil to fill in a mind filled with goodness. Good thoughts are an impervious armor. Clad therewith, you are completely shielded from the attacks of error of every sort. And not only yourself are safe, but all whom your thoughts rest upon are thereby benefited. The self-seeking pride of the evil thinker injures him when he would harm others. Goodness involuntarily resists evil. The evil thinker is the proud talker and doer. The right thinker abides under the shadow of the Almighty. His thoughts can only reflect peace, goodwill towards men, health, and holiness. See what a sublime standpoint she takes now. How to handle evil. Says, well, to handle evil is to fill thoughts constantly, so completely with the question, what is God? That then, well, something is filled to the nth degree, nothing can enter. When there is no more a door open through which something can enter, there is no more room where something evil can be harbored. So the answer she gives now towards the end of her life is to handle evil from the point of view of the wholeness of love. Love which never loses sight of loveliness. And that's the best protection we have. That's the best protection we have for handling evil, that we never lose sight of the idea of mind, of the idea of spirit, and of soul, and of principle, and of life, and of truth, and of love. If then our thought and our whole attitude and our love is so filled with that, then nothing can enter. And somehow we are always preserved. And somehow evil always comes too late. It always hits then too high or too low, to the right, to the left, and thousands can fall to the right and thousands to the left, but we'll never be hit. So that is really what introduces, I think, the final period, which in Science and Health begins with the 226th edition in 1902, where for the first time she has the 16 chapters in the final order, and from that time on she changes in the text very little. But those little things which she does change still afterwards up to 1910 are very remarkable. Well, in this last seventh revision, beginning with 1902, we find in the text of the chapter Animal Magnetism insofar a change from the sixth revision of Truth that now the tone of love becomes much more dominant, namely the tone of the nothingness of evil. In the sixth revision, evil was called to be a belief that it has no quality of truth, that it is not real, but in the seventh, it goes a step further and it shows much more the nothingness and elusiveness of animal magnetism. Now she begins to write that animal magnetism possesses no reality and in sense is an unreal concept of the so-called mortal mind. Now she calls it a so-called mortal mind, not just mortal mind, so-called mortal mind. She says that this so-called despotism is but a phase of nothingness. Then she speaks of the so-called action of animal magnetism. You see, it all becomes all very hypothetical, very thin, very thin. Here she states that evil is unreal, as she had done before, and that evil is a suppositional lie. And finally, in 1909, she changes a very important paragraph, which I think I would like to tell you. Up to 1909, she still had this paragraph in her text where she said, "The maximum of good, however, is met by the maximum of suppositional evil. Hence the fight to crush science." And then she changed that in 1909 and changed it and said, "The maximum of good is the infinite God and his idea." You get the tone of love, never lose the sight of loveliness. That that's the maximum of God. It's the infinite God and his idea, the all in all. See, there is no more that it is met by the maximum of evil. No more that it is met by the maximum of evil to crush science. It's all out. It's just one thing left, that the maximum of good is the infinite God and his idea, the all in all. Evil is a suppositional lie. And then in 1910, in the last year, she changed the title of the chapter and called it now Animal Magnetism Unmasked. Up to that point, it was just Animal Magnetism. Now, the final touch she gives, she says, it's unmasked. And she has written that the maximum of God is God and his idea, the all in all, and that evil is just a suppositional lie. It's not only a supposition, it's not just a lie, it's a suppositional lie, and it's to bring out the nothingness and the hypothetical nature and the imaginary nature of it better, just call it a suppositional lie. Then she says, Animal Magnetism Unmasked. That's the title.